You're listening to the Sekoa Media App.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sports Talk 365 podcast. I am Joe Sekoa. On the phone is a good buddy of mine, Brad Kurtzberg, who covers the NHL. And when we bring him on the podcast, it only means one thing. We're going to be talking hockey and giving you basically the NHL report as we get into this new podcast. And of course, we're trying so many different things here with Sekoa Media, with the podcast, obviously getting a video going as well. You'll be able to catch it on Twitch, on YouTube, and on Twitter. So a lot of fun things happening here on our end. But as always, when we talk hockey, I like to thank Brad for joining us. Brad, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, of course. And, of course, Happy New Year to all of our listeners, all of our followers, as we are in now to January of 2022, and things are certainly heating up in the NHL. Of course, just to get off the bat here, in case you haven't heard, the NHL will not be participating in the Winter Olympics. I know everybody was excited about that, and especially because, you know, we were finally getting Olympic hockey back, and then all of a sudden, you know, with COVID and everything going on, and of course, what would have happened if you would have gotten COVID, you would have been stuck in China for 2 weeks. So those were some things that were a little iffy with the players. So they decided to pull out of the Olympics. So it's going to be interesting to see, because they built in the schedule those 2.5 weeks to be off. But now, because of COVID and ravaging a bunch of teams, and we'll get into it, that'll probably be the time that they make up those games. So, Brad, I want to get your thoughts overall quickly as we start the show here. Your thoughts on the NHL pulling out of the Olympics. Now, even though that this was voted on by both the NHL and the NHL Players Association, we are getting reports that there are players, and players have spoken out about the fact that the Olympics, that the NHL pulled out of the Olympics, and some of them have been displeased by that. So just your overall sense of your thoughts on it, and why is there such, it seems, tension within the Players Association, considering that they had to vote on that, and obviously they must have voted enough in favor to pull out while there's still some players that are upset.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm disappointed. I was looking forward to the resumption of NHL players participating in Olympic hockey. But at the same time, I fully understand why they had to do it. You have the combination of not being able to be fully safe over in China. You're talking about, as you said, the quarantine requirements if somebody does test positive. And then you add to that the fact that so many NHL games have been postponed because of COVID and they have to make them up. It really wasn't practical anymore to have the players participate. And I understand the players' disappointment, those who still want to play. The Olympics is an honor. It's something that only happens once every 4 years. Maybe even the most elite players get a chance to do it maybe 2 or 3 times in their career. Last 4 years ago, there wasn't that opportunity. So I understand the disappointment, but from a practical standpoint, I really don't see an alternative unless you want the season to stretch into May or June and then start the Stanley Cup playoffs then.
Yeah, and you know what it is, too, is that if you look at the schedule, the NHL schedule is not due to complete towards the end of April, and that is, of course, as we mentioned, the fact that it was built in because of that Olympic break. And that kind of ties into where the league is right now, because you have quite a few teams who have fallen drastically behind as far as games. It hasn't been so bad, but one of the notable teams, and that's kind of where we'll get into here on the local side of things here in New York before we get into the overall NHL, but the New York Islanders have only played 28 games. That's almost as much as 10 games fewer than a lot of teams thus far in the league. So The Islanders have played 28 games at this point, while a lot of other teams are at the 33 to 38 game mark. You know, the Ottawa Senators have played just 29 games. Looking down the rest of it, you know, everyone else in the 30s at some point. But, and finally, the Islanders are getting back on the ice tonight after what has been just an eternity of a layoff for them. So how important is it now for the New York Islanders to kind of catch up? I mean, in a sense, it's good that they're, you know, let's just say for argument's sake, you look at in the Metropolitan Division, the New York Rangers and Washington Capitals, they have both played 37 games. So the Islanders have 9 games in hand on those two teams. So it's good and bad. Yeah, it's been a long layoff, but 9 games in hand can give you an opportunity to kind of catch up a little bit. So let's talk about the Islanders in specifically on, you know, what needs to happen here and how they got to kind of get back into their groove.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Islanders are about, what, 14 points behind the last wild card team, which is Boston right now. But, you know, I look at the standings. The Islanders are 7 points behind or 6 points behind the Devils with 8 games in hand for 7th place. It's insane. It's absolutely insane to have that big a disparity between the teams and the number of games played. And for the Islanders, it creates a sort of a mixed blessing because you're very happy to have the games in hand. It gives you a chance to catch up. But you're also ending up playing a lot of games in not a lot of days. So the Islanders are going to have a lot of back-to-backs, a lot of 3 games in 4 nights. And that does make it more difficult in a lot of ways to make up those games because to make the playoffs, the Islanders are going to have to get about 67% of the available points left to reach 98 points for the season. That's a tall order when those games are compressed like the schedule is going to be for this team.
You know, and you look at the fact, too, that they've had their bouts of COVID where players, not just individual players, but like chunks of players have gone out and into COVID protocol numerous times. And we're seeing it up and down the league. And that's where I think the NHL is trying to get a handle on it. Of course, there was a little bit of controversy earlier in the season with the Islanders where they had as much as 8 players in COVID protocol, but the NHL didn't suspend their games or didn't postpone their games while other teams had 6 players. So they're kind of getting a grasp on it. The guidelines change on, it seems like, I can't even say a daily basis anymore, probably more so on an hourly basis. But you talk about those games condensed right now. You know, I think the Islanders have to now have it in their mindset that you're going to have these games compressed, but also they need to be prepared, just like any team needs to be prepared, that you're probably going to get hit with players going into COVID protocol all these different times. So not even to get into the politics of this, but do you think it would be wise then on the NHL side of things? I know that things have changed. The quarantine period has shortened based off of CDC guidelines, but I know we're also hearing some players, some even with the Islanders, that players are feeling fine, but they're going to get these tests and they're coming back positive, so they wind up being asymptomatic. Do you think maybe just eliminate the testing for players that actually feel fine and maybe just test the players that are sick? Because obviously, it's like, how do you get a handle on this? Because I'm sure the Islanders definitely don't want to go through this, nor any team wants to go through this again, where you have this such extended layoff.
Yeah, it's tough, and I don't understand. You know, one of the things that I didn't understand is why the NHL canceled the Islanders' Western Canadian road trip. It was 4 games, 3 in Western Canada, 1 in Seattle. And, you know, no one, it wasn't that COVID was ravaging either of the teams involved in the games, but that there were attendance restrictions in Canada. And I think there's a real problem with canceling games just for attendance purposes when so many players are coming down with COVID and you're just sort of, again, compressing more and more games, hoping that those attendance restrictions will be reduced. With regard to the testing question, I think the problem is this. If you can transmit COVID,
yeah,
if you're asymptomatic, you still need to test because The most important thing has got to be the safety of the players, the coaches, the people who work for the team, and their families. And yeah, most NHL players are going to be 20-something and in very good physical condition and probably don't have a significant number of pre-existing conditions that could complicate things for them if they get COVID. But that doesn't mean they don't have family members, people they live with, people they come in contact with all the time, who are at a higher risk. So to me, the testing, even if you're asymptomatic, if you can transmit it, you've got to test. Otherwise, you get more players coming down positive and more players, you know, getting COVID and then possibly spreading it to people who could be vulnerable. So when in doubt, you've got to err on the side of caution.
Yeah, absolutely, they do. So as you mentioned, the Islanders now are going to get back out on the swing of things, and yeah, they're going to have a lot of games condensed here. So they started up tonight. They're at home against the New Jersey Devils. Then they'll play an afternoon game at home against the Washington Capitals. Then you get into next week, and they'll do a back-to-back. They'll have the 17th, which is Monday. They'll play at home against Philadelphia, and then on the 18th, they'll play in Philadelphia. Now, that was originally supposed to be against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That game got postponed, pushed to another date. They put the Flyers in, so they'll complete a home-and-home there Monday and Tuesday. They're off for a couple of days, and then it's another set of back-to-back games, Arizona and Toronto, next Friday and Saturday. But again, those games are at home. So the Islanders are going to finish up the month of January, with the exception of that game on Tuesday, on home ice. So they're going to be home, so at least that gives them a little bit more of you know, a little bit more of an advantage because they're not traveling so much. So next Friday, Saturday, Arizona, Toronto. Then you go into the third week of January, January 25th against the Flyers, January 27th against the Kings, the 29th against Seattle, and then the 30th against Minnesota. So the Islanders have it to their advantage here, Brad. And the other thing is that when they were playing hockey, you know, when they weren't on this long layoff, home ice seemed to be a bit of a problem for them. It took them quite a bit of time before they earned that first win at the new UBS Arena, just 4-5-3 on home ice. You'd have to think that this stretch now, getting back into hockey and having these home games to pretty much finish up the entire month of January, they're going to have to win some hockey games on home ice.
No doubt. And I think the slow start at home had more to do with how many players they didn't have available at that time rather than any other real problems with, you know, winning at home in general. But look, here's the deal. Between now and the All-Star break, the Islanders have 11 games. 10 of them are at home. You have the one game in Philadelphia. That 90-minute car ride is the longest road trip they've got. Mm-hmm. 7 of those 11 games are against teams that are struggling right now. So here's their chance. If they don't get, I would say, at least 15 or 16 points out of those 11 games, the playoffs may be out of reach for this team at this point. It's the key to the season, getting those points in these games when you're playing weaker teams and you're playing at home and you have a chance to make up some of those games in hand. This is it. It's kind of do or die, set up by the fact that they got off to that slow start.
Now, to cover all bases here with the Islanders before we move on, are we going to have to anticipate fans coming back and saying if the Islanders don't make the playoffs, well, the season really was against us with COVID and the long layoffs and all that stuff? Are we really going to be able to buy that excuse? We know the players won't give that excuse, but is that a valid excuse if you're a fan of the Islanders and the Islanders don't make the playoffs?
I think there are a number of factors that sort of played into it. You start the season with a 13-game road trip. That's not easy to do. They were handling it well until COVID ravaged the team. Look, sometimes you just get unlucky. And the thing about the Islanders, the way they play the game, it's very system-oriented. It's very precise. You have to be positionally sound and in the perfect position to pick up your man and make plays. And, you know, when you've got 6-7 guys out of the lineup, it's hard to have everyone on the same page and to do that. So realistically, sometimes you just get lucky. If the Islanders aren't able to get back into the playoff hunt, you know, will the fans make that excuse? Probably. Is there some legitimacy to it? Yes. Do they need to rebuild this team top to bottom if they don't make the playoffs this year? I would say no, they don't, but they can certainly trade off some of the older players who have expiring contracts, free up some cap space, and make some tweaks to improve this team going forward for next year if they can't get back into the playoff hunt.
Well, this will be their chance here, as you mentioned, with the extended home game schedule here the rest of the month, and against opponents that right now, you look at the opponents, some of them not in the playoff race as of right now, but of course the Islanders sit eighth in the Metropolitan Division. That is at the bottom, but with the fewest game played, 28 games, 10, 12, and 6, only 26 points on the season and in the negative of goal differential. Sticking within the three locals, we'll go to the New Jersey Devils, who are just above the New York Islanders. 36 games played this season, 14, 17, and 5, 33 points on the season, 4 and 6 in their last 10. Boy, things have really been getting a little bit frustrating for them. You know, they go out, they get Dougie Hamilton, comes off, does a great job. He then gets hurt. You obviously have P.K. Subban. They're trying to get some of these young guys meshed in together. Nico Hischier is finally playing good. Jack Hughes coming back after missing some time. But what's going on with the Devils here, Brad? Because it seems as if that they're on the right track. They're building a younger team. They have one of the younger teams in the league. You know, what's the situation with the New Jersey Devils? There were times where their games were getting together, but then defensively they have just struggled, and the goaltending really has not been good, especially Mackenzie Blackwood, who actually just yesterday went into COVID protocol. So you got the defense situation going on where they're kind of hurt a little bit, but the goaltending has not been good. The New Jersey Devils are sitting near the bottom of the Metropolitan.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a young team. They are still learning how to win. They are still not yet at their peak performance when you go up and down this roster. Most of the players are still developing and not yet reaching their potential. Part of it is COVID. I mean, they have 7 players in protocol right now, so that certainly complicates it. And you have, you know, a good portion of your roster is really AHL or taxi squad kind of caliber guys. But I think the Devils are headed in the right direction. But when you have this young of a team and you're relying on, you know, guys like Hughes who are just, you know, starting to get into their prime, you're going to have that inconsistency. I agree with you. They're headed in the right direction, but it's going to take them another year, maybe two, to fully get there.
Yeah, and especially you think, and this is where I think a lot of people were kind of scrutinizing the deal or when they brought him in, but, and Lindy Ruff, we're not discrediting Lindy Ruff, and you know, there might be some Ranger fans who have some sour grapes towards him. I thought he did a great job with Dallas. I thought he did a tremendous job in Buffalo, but is Lindy Ruff the person that needs to be here behind the bench for the New Jersey Devils going forward?
You know, I think that remains to be seen, and how he handles the rest of this season will go a long way toward determining that. I think you can win with Lindy Ruff. I think he's a quality coach. The question becomes whether he's the right fit for this team at this moment, and he's got to prove that by how his team performs the rest of the season.
So if I were to ask you right now, the New Jersey Devils, buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? Mind you, we're still a ways away from the trade deadline, and doesn't seem to be much action going on just yet. But if you're the New Jersey Devils, where would you be sitting at this point when you get to the trade deadline, and what possibly could they use, let's just say, if they wanted to make a run at a playoff spot?
If they want to make a run, I think they need some reinforcements on the blue line, some more depth there, and maybe one, like, second-line type of scoring player. Goaltending, you know, you mentioned that they've been struggling there, and I think that's an issue, whether or not Blackwood is the right guy for the job long term. I'm still not sold, but I'm not dismissing him either. But short term, I think it's fortifying the defense and maybe supplementing the scoring a little bit. And then someone who can contribute on the power play, because their power play has been dreadful this year.
Yeah, that's something that obviously they need to improve on as well. And especially, we all know, power play, special teams come huge when you get into these playoff races. All right, moving on in the Metropolitan Division. Brad, if we sat here at the beginning of the season and said 37 games into the season, the New York Rangers would be tied for first in the Metropolitan Division, would you have believed it if we talked about it back then before the season started?
I would have not taken that bet, let's put it that way. Well, and the Rangers have to be pleased with the way this season has started, the way that they're playing, the way that they're, overcoming all of the craziness going on around them. This team is in a good position right now, and they have to be happy about where they stand 37 games into the season.
23-10-4, 50 points on the season, and as I mentioned, tied for first place in the Metropolitan Division right behind Carolina. Carolina holds that first spot due to points percentage, but they are 10-3-2 on home ice, 13-7-2 on the road, struggling a little bit in their last 10, but still above 500, 5-4-1. However, they're coming off of a loss as they're in the midst of this really extended West Coast trip. It started out in Vegas. They lost, kind of got the floor wiped with them in Vegas, bounced back, had a dominant performance against Anaheim. Then they kind of poo-poo the bed a little bit in Los Angeles against the Kings, who were struggling as well. Now they'll have an opportunity later on tonight, as we record this podcast, later on tonight against the San Jose Sharks to conclude the West Coast part of this trip before they come back to the East Coast and take on Philadelphia over the weekend before they are back home. But, yeah, you mentioned it. You know, they're also dealing with a little bit of a COVID protocol as well. Igor Shesterkin has been in COVID protocol for now about a week. He has not played any games on this road trip. Alexander Georgiev has been the guy in net. They've had guys come up and down. Artemi Panarin came back from COVID protocol against Los Angeles. Ryan Reeves is able to come out of COVID protocol. But, yeah, you mentioned it. The New York Rangers are doing this with makeshift bottom 3-4 lines right now. And they're playing very well, and it remains to be seen if this team can only just get better if they're at full strength.
Yeah, you have 32 teams asking that question, I think, right now. But for the Rangers, definitely, you got to be pleased with what you've seen, and you've got to wonder how much better can they get. And I think the answer is they can get better. And, this team has taken such a nice leap from a year ago and from 2 years ago, there's no comparison.
No, absolutely not. And, the one thing, too, is that I wonder if you kind of listen to it when some of these players talk a little bit and how the atmosphere in the locker room has been so much different, how guys are more comfortable playing with each other. Look, the New York Rangers went out and addressed a major need, and that was team toughness. They brought in the toughness, basically telling other teams, you're not going to come in and walk all over us. When they introduced Gerard Gallant, the head coach of the New York Rangers, he said the goal is to be a 60-minute team and basically be a pain in the ass to play against, and that's exactly what they're doing. Outside of a couple of, maybe a handful of stinkers this season, the New York Rangers have been in every game, and even in the close losses, they've played well, and they've really played to the buzzer. So looking at it right now, the New York Rangers have about $4.6 million in cap space, but when you get to the deadline, and this is where it's always interesting, actually they have about $8.7 in cap space right now. Then when you get to the deadline, they can add about $23 million in contracts. So it's going to be interesting to see where the New York Rangers are come this trade deadline, because as a Ranger fan, you kind of look at it and be like, all right, we're good, we're exceeding expectations, but it's like, all right, how long can this hold on to? What are the Rangers missing? We've seen a couple of defensive flaws the last couple of games, maybe a little bit more of a veteran defense present, and maybe another scorer, preferably a center that can win faceoffs, would possibly be, I believe, the trade targets for the New York Rangers. Would you say that that's a fair assessment, at least for the New York Rangers, to at least have them, if they're looking on this market to bring in?
Yeah, I think that is exactly what this team needs. And maybe a sort of a physical veteran defenseman who can get the job done. And faceoffs, come playoff time, faceoffs are even more important. Puck possession is an important factor, and to start off every play with possession of the puck is a big, big advantage, especially in the playoffs when you're matching lines, when your power play becomes that much more important. That would be, and the thing about a solid third, let's say third line center who can win faceoffs, that doesn't necessarily have to cost you a lot in capital or in contract money, in cap space. So, you know, that's not something that you have to break the bank for. You can get a solid guy, and it can make a big difference for this team. Little subtle things on the ice that can make a big difference come playoff time and come the stretch drive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to look really good. All right, looking at the rest of the Metropolitan Division, as we mentioned, Carolina in first place, 24-7-2, 50 points. Washington on the Rangers' tail, 49 points, just 1 point back. Pittsburgh has really turned it around, 9-1 in their last 10, now 47 points on the season. And then there's a drastic drop-off between 4, where Pittsburgh is, and 5, Columbus. Columbus, 33 points. Philadelphia, 33 points. And then we mentioned the Devils at 33 points and the Islanders at 26 points. If you had to look at it right now, Carolina, the Rangers, Washington, and even Pittsburgh, because those four teams, if you look at the league or if you look at the conference themselves, they would be in a playoff spot right now. Do you think those teams hold up, and what's been more surprising in the Metropolitan Division amongst those teams?
Wow. You know, the team that I'm worried about, if I'm a Rangers fan right now, is Pittsburgh, because they're getting healthy again. They just got Evgeny Malkin back into their lineup for the first time a couple of days back. So, you know, they have Crosby back. They have Malkin back. All of a sudden, they're healthy. And, you know, you mentioned they've been hot lately. They could go on a pretty long run of success right now, because they're getting all of their key players back in the lineup, and there is enough talent on that team to make them real contenders.
What about Washington? Do you think Washington is for real as they normally are?
You know, I am still not 100% sold on Washington. Sometimes I just think they're a little too dependent on Ovechkin and
him scoring at least two goals a game.
Yeah, I'm just not sold that. I mean, look, if anyone can consistently produce offensively in this league, Ovechkin is on the short list. But at the same time, to ask someone to do that and not have enough secondary scorers around him to consistently get the job done, you know, in the playoffs, you get a 7-game series, they'll shadow a player, they'll have someone, you know, shadow them the whole series, try to slow them down, match lines, it becomes a more difficult thing. So, you know, the Capitals, I'm concerned about the overall depth. Do I think that they are a good team? Yes. But do I think they're an elite team? Not yet. No.
Okay. Interesting to see. But that Metro division always is a division that becomes a very huge gauntlet as we get into the playoff stretch. Moving over to the Atlantic Division as we continue here on the Sports Talk 365 podcast, Joe Sikoa, Brad Kurtzberg on the phone. This is another division to watch out for, because you got the two Florida teams neck and neck right now, both sitting at the top of the Atlantic at 53 points apiece. Florida currently holds that first spot. And given the fact that, you know, Florida had to dismiss Joel Quenneville because of the allegations and stemming back to the whole Blackhawks thing, they're playing very good hockey, 24-7-5. Then you got Tampa Bay, who they themselves are getting healthy. Nikita Kucherov back, 53 points. Toronto sits third in the Atlantic at 49 points, but there's going to be times where, you know, you're going to look at games like last night for Toronto, where they took on the lowly Arizona Coyotes and lost 2-1. Those are games that come back to bite you. Boston sitting in the fourth spot in the Atlantic at 42 points, 7-3 in their last 10. They're getting a little bit of a win streak going here. Then you have Detroit at 5, 37 points, and then there's the big drop-off. The teams near the bottom of this league, Buffalo, 26 points, Ottawa at 20 points, and good grief, the Montreal Canadiens, 18 points on the season, just 7 wins in their season thus far. They come off of the shellacking from Boston last night. And the one thing I wanted to get your take on here, Brad, before we look at the entire Atlantic Division, I was watching the TNT broadcast, and Paul Bessonnette on TNT said he actually believes Boston worries him that Boston might not get into the playoffs given their current position, which if you look at the Eastern Conference, they actually are sitting in the eighth spot right now, holding on to a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, Boston, look, they just signed Tuukka Rask to come back. I think Boston is probably the most vulnerable out of the eight teams right now that are holding on to a spot, not just because they're in eighth, but because I question whether or not they have the consistency necessary to continue to play at a playoff level over the second half of the season. Can they do it? Yeah, but I think if you get a team that makes a run, whether that team is the Islanders, the Blue Jackets, the Red Wings, whoever it's going to be, I think Boston is the most vulnerable team, and the team that doesn't have as much depth as a lot of the other top competitors in the Eastern Conference.
How impressed are you with the Florida Panthers? They're the second team in the league when it comes to goal differential. They're sitting up at first place. Obviously, it's going to be a neck-and-neck tie between them and Tampa Bay. But Florida seems like to be one of those teams that could be extremely dangerous. And if they can add at the deadline, it could be much to their treasure if they're able to add at the deadline.
Oh, I agree, and I'm very high on the Florida Panthers. You know, they don't play in a traditional hockey market. They don't get a lot of media attention nationally or internationally, but they're a darn good hockey team. And you mentioned, you know, having to release Joel Quenneville mid-season because of what happened back in 2010. And, you know, they maybe stumbled for a few games, but they haven't really missed a beat, despite all that controversy. And, you know, that's something that can really tear a team apart or really affect the team adversely. I like this team. I like their depth. I like their defense. I like the balanced scoring that they provide. And they're just not getting enough respect from the media right now and from fans because they're the Florida Panthers and they're not a original six or big market kind of a team.
Yeah, and the real interesting thing is here, and this is where I think Florida will have to be put to the test. They've only had 14 games on the road while playing 22 games on home ice. So they're 19-3 on home ice, 5-4-5 on the road. So Florida is probably going to have a lot of road games coming up, and that's going to be the biggest test to them. And then, of course, as you mentioned, you have the low teams at the bottom, but I feel like, Brad, there's one team that could be a dark horse team here in this Atlantic Division, and I think it's the Detroit Red Wings. They're sitting at .500 right now, struggling in their last 10, but this is a team that now has Steve Yzerman running in the hockey operations department, and just the other day made a little bit more news, bringing in a former Detroit man, Nick Lindstrom, to their hockey operations department. Can that be a dark horse team that, you know, might sneak in here with the Atlantic?
I think they'll be competitive this year. I think they're headed in the right direction, but they're probably 1 year away from being a real playoff team. They'll make it interesting this year, though, and I like the way that that team is being run right now.
Looking over to the Western Conference now, and you look at the Central Division, and believe it or not, the six teams out of the eight teams in the Central Division are well above .500. So this is really going to be another division to look at. Nashville sits atop right now on a 5-game win streak, 8-1-1 in their last 10 at 50 points. Then you have the Colorado Avalanche, who are heavy favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year coming into the season, 22-8, 47 points. Then St. Louis, 47 points. They're starting to play some really good hockey. Minnesota in the 4 spot at 44 points. They're also starting to play some good hockey. Then you got Dallas in fifth at 38 points, and Winnipeg in sixth at 37 points, and then you have Chicago at 31 points, and the Arizona Coyotes near the bottom, or at the basement, 19 points on the season. But this is a very stacked division here, like I said, Brad, and six out of the eight teams are above .500, so this is certainly going to be a gauntlet. What are some of the teams you're surprised with, and who might make a little bit of a push here.
Well, I didn't expect Nashville to be this high in the standings. I thought they'd be competitive. I thought they would make the playoffs, but I thought they'd be one of the last teams in rather than the first, and they are a pleasant surprise this year. Team I wouldn't underestimate, Dallas. I just think they have one more run in them. I think you'll see five teams from this division make the playoffs, and that will include the Dallas Stars when it's all said and done.
How about the Minnesota Wild? It seems as if they had a little bit of a turbulent start to the season, but they've kind of turned it around a little bit as well. And if I really had to look at a dark horse team here, I think the Minnesota Wild would be one of those teams that might be sneaky good, especially if they make a little bit of a run. And you got to give credit to some of the players who have been stepping up. Marcus Foligno and Ryan Hartman really have been putting the puck in the back of the net and carrying this Minnesota team.
They have, and that's been big. And they're getting balanced scoring, which a lot of people did not necessarily expect. So, yeah, I mean, you overlook the Minnesota Wild at your own peril. That's a good, balanced hockey team. You know, injury problems coming right now. Their leading scorer just got hurt. Don't know how long he's going to be out of the lineup. But overall, that's a good hockey team. And if they stay relatively healthy, they are going to compete for the top spot in that division all season.
And now over to the Pacific Division. You have the Vegas Golden Knights in first place with 48 points. God, those fans are just so lucky. Every year this team has been in the league, which is what, 4 years now? They're at the top of things. Anaheim in second place, 45 points. Los Angeles in third at 41 points. San Jose is there at 41 points. Calgary in fifth at 40 points. Edmonton all the way down in sixth at 38 points. Now 10 points off the lead. Vancouver sits at 35 points, and Seattle is at the basement at 24 points. But here's another one. Look at this division, the Pacific Division. 7 of the 8 teams are 500 or better. So there are teams playing really good, but it's just a matter of you got to get those points when you can. And this is another division that we might have to keep an eye on as they go forward. I think collectively here we can say, Brad, the team that's most surprising right now that is in desperate need of help are the Edmonton Oilers, because they are 2-6-2 in their last 10, and you can tell that the frustration is starting to boil there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, they are going about trying to fix this, I think, in the wrong way. And the rumors are going around that they're going to sign Evander Kane and add him to the lineup, and it's creating all kinds of controversy. But, you know, to me, their bigger needs are on defense and in goal, not to add another scorer like Evander Kane. So I don't understand why this team always feels the only thing they need to do is add offense when defense is what really wins championships.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And also, like I said, Anaheim, a pleasant surprise as well. Los Angeles getting themselves up there a little bit. So is there a team in this division that you see as a, again, we look at each of these divisions, we have a dark horse. Is there a team that you might want to sit there and say, we might have to keep an eye on them?
You know what? To me, you might have to keep an eye on the LA Kings. They're a little bit ahead of schedule. I thought that they would not really be contenders until next year, but, you know, they're getting better goaltending. Jonathan Quick seems to have found a time machine. He got into the DeLorean, and all of a sudden it's like 2015 again, the way he's playing.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as he can continue to play like that, they'll be in every game, and they're getting a little bit more balanced scoring. I think the Kings and the Ducks are pleasant surprises that aren't going to go away anytime soon.
No, without a doubt. So obviously all these teams fighting for it, and I think this is going to be a lot closer in each of these divisions than we have seen the last couple of seasons. And again, it all comes down to grabbing as many points and, of course, trying to navigate through this whole COVID situation. All right, Brad, before I let you go and before we wrap up this podcast, I would be remiss now, because we're living in the New York area, and I know a bunch of people, including myself, are extremely happy at the fact that New York is finally online and betting on games. So I want to give you my bold six-team parlay tonight in hockey, and you tell me what you think, okay? This is what I'm going with, and this is a $5 wager here, okay? So I'm picking the money line. So these are all money lines. I'm picking the Tampa Bay Lightning and the over of 5.5 goals on the game. I have the Boston Bruins and them over 5.5 because the last couple of games I picked them under 5.5 in their games. They've scored 5 goals, of course. Nashville and the over at 5.5. They're taking on the Buffalo Sabres, so that's almost like a gimme right there. The Chicago Blackhawks and the under 5.5 as they take on the Montreal Canadiens. The Calgary Flames and under 5.5 as they take on the Ottawa Senators. And I'm taking the New York Rangers against the San Jose Sharks at under 5.5. So that $5 wager could be a total payout of $4,600.
Is that all?
That is all. That is all.
That is all. Well, good luck with that. I'm not so sure about the under in the Ottawa game. But other than that, I think you've made some pretty sound choices.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we'll see what happens. Like I said, there's been some people commenting on it that I posted it up about the some of the under-over question marks there. But we'll have to obviously see how it goes.
Well, good luck with it. And like I said, I think your choices are pretty wise, but you know, you got to hit it on the nose to win it. So good luck.
Exactly. All right. Well, Brad, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us here on the state of the NHL and the NHL report.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. And we want to thank you for listening, watching, wherever you may be. This has been the Sports Talk 365 podcast on behalf of Brad Kurtzberg. I'm Joe Sikoa. We'll see you next time.